They want to really make it uneconomical for women to go outside the home. So that they will give tax exempt, incentives for having children, for adopting children. They will allow child care deductions for doing religious and charitable work. All right, it doesn't become very much worthwhile for a woman to stay in the workforce and have her own independent money when you're pouring money in that kind of direction. There's a presumption that it tries to dictate. That in any litigation involving parental rights, there'll be a presumption in favor of an expansive interpretation of the rights of parents to dictate the religious or moral formation of the child. It also totally exempts religious institutions from any kind of constitutional controls. I think there's one provision, which is a small provision, but I think it really reflects the sexism and the racism of the Family Protection Act, and that is the provision which gives a $3,000 tax exemption to anyone who adopts a child of another race over 3 years old or handicapped. And this is what it is, all right? In order to have this, you must be married and filing a joint return, which means you have to be a two-parent family. It doesn't go to single parents. And it doesn't go to minorities, by and large, because the child of another race provision is based upon the perception, right, of there being a lot of hard-to-place minority children. Right? So that if a black family wants to go adopt a black hard-to-place child, they don't get a $3,000 tax exemption. Only the white family does. And somehow or other, that to me kind of, it's a little provision, but it really puts together an awful lot of what the perspective is here. They also don't want any programs about child or spouse abuse. They want no federal funds for anything to do with that. They don't want any federal laws that would help in the enforcement of those kinds of provisions. They want notification of parents before any program which gets federal funds counsels kids on contraception, abortion, requires the parents be notified within 24 hours of the commencement of the treatment of venereal disease. Now, in the old days, the idea was you had to protect kids because they could get totally eaten up by venereal disease. And now the point is parents have to know about sex, and they will use every effort they can to tell them about it. Two other provisions I'll mention, and I mean, people should be wiped out enough already. One is there's this whole discussion of cutting out legal services. Now, if you cut out legal services, then you cut the poor out of that aspect of citizenship that has to do with being able to enforce something and deal with organizing their lives. They don't eliminate legal services. They just completely take away the heart of it here. They will not allow legal services to be involved in any litigation involving abortion. There's already a limitation on non-therapeutic abortion. In any litigation involving school desegregation, in any litigation involving military service, which means with the problem of an increasing draft that the poor have no access, with any litigation involving divorce or gay rights, which means custody questions can't get resolved in any kind of way, although they don't get resolved very well anyway, in any advocacy of public policy, which means that they can't take stands on what's good for the poor. The other final thing here is an anti-gay provision, which would deny federal funds to any program which advocates homosexuality as an acceptable alternative lifestyle. And at the same time, it seeks to encourage discrimination against gay people. There's no legal federal protection against being discriminated against for sexual preference. They want to do worse. They want to say there is no reason why. They want to write into the law the permission to discriminate against homosexuals because of their sexual preference. And so that's, that is a very short summary of the Family Protection Act, but I think what you were saying before, Betty, about it not being a single-issue movement is really reflected in that act.
This is WBAI,
New York.
Yeah, the impact, I think, is clear.
and the fact that it is going to, I mean, just the one section about, you know, no more food stamps for college kids is devastating. I mean, you just see the whole open enrollment notion in the universities and the kind of funding that has been available and is already being eroded just in terms of scholarship and grant. Now they don't want minorities to eat while they're going to school either. And the clear conclusion is that people are not going to be going to school. What the Act does is put us back to 1950. And what we need to do is what I would like to talk about a little bit now. Why don't we say, Rhonda, talk about the work of CARASA to date and other organizations so that the listeners, hoping that they've been horrified and will be riveted into action, will know what organizations already exist for trying to bring together the anger and the energy that we all have in trying to deal with these things.
Also, could you just give some explanation of the current status of this bill in Congress
right
now?
Let me give you the current status of everything. This bill, I'm not sure whether it has been reintroduced in its exactly the same form. What people seem to expect is that this bill is going to come up in little pieces. There are some little pieces which all by themselves look attractive, particularly to the middle class. It is very important, I think, around the Family Protection Act for us to do educational work on the whole, because it does show the whole ideology of the moral majority, quote, pro-family movement. And it will, I think, build the base against the little provisions as they come up. The other thing I wanted to say is I indicated that I think that the constitutional amendment is, I want to say this, it's a very serious threat. I mean, unless something serious happens on our side in terms of our mobilization, we are going to see a constitutional amendment against abortion. I think that that is a real danger. On the other hand, they're not there yet, and it is important for people to understand that this Helms bill, which is S-158, is a critical thing to watch, and though I don't usually think writing legislatures is exactly the most exciting, activity, I actually think that one should do this. And that is that this bill would try to declare the fetus a person under the 14th Amendment and say that Congress has the power to do this. And the more, I think that there's real problems with that provision. The more, and then what they're basically saying to the states is, you restrict abortion. It's like a states' rights amendment. Then the other part of it is to eliminate the lower federal courts from hearing any abortion cases involving injunctions against abortion restrictions. That would effectively eliminate any kind of meaningful judicial review of these state restrictions, except in situations where you had a few state courts, like New York, California, and a few others, which tend to be liberal. And it would therefore be like the states' rights amendment in that you'd have a little pocket here or there of legal abortion or somewhat legal abortion, not what we're experiencing today. And otherwise, you'd have a blanket out on abortion. So this is very serious. They are really trying to get around the amendment. I think it is unconstitutional, but I do not think you can count on the Supreme Court to declare it unconstitutional, and that we have to realize that therefore we must defeat it politically before it even gets to that stage. That's sort of the sort of legislative update. That's the most immediate thing. The Helms bill, S-158, is the most immediate thing on the legislative agenda.
Okay, why don't we take a musical break now, and then we'll come back, and we'll be taking listener phone calls at area code 212-279-3400. That's area code 212-279-3400. This is Every Woman's Space, the Woman's Legal Clinic, with attorneys Rhonda Copeland and Betty Levinson, and we're discussing just about every aspect of the issue of abortion, the Helms Bill, and the Family Protection Act. Again, area code 212-279-3400. Stay tuned.
Everybody thinks my head's full of nothing, wants to put his special stuff in. Fill a space with candy wrappers, keep out sex and revolution, but there's no hole in my head. Too bad. Call me a dupe of this and the other, call me a puppet on a string. They don't know my head's full of me and that I have my own special thing, and there's no hole in my head. Too bad. I have lived since early childhood figuring out what's going on. I know what hurts, I know what's easy.
Area code 212-279-3400. That's area code 212-279-3400 to talk with attorneys Rhonda Copeland and Betty Levinson on the issue of abortion. This is the Woman's Legal Clinic. Area code 212-279-3400. We'll be taking listener phone calls in a few minutes. Stay tuned.
A kind of bird song up somewhere, there's feet walking the way I mean to go, and there's no hole in my head.
Too bad.
Everybody thinks my head's full of nothing, wants to put his special stuff in. Fill the space with candy wrappers, keep out sex and revolution, but there's no hole in my head. Too bad.
Okay, we're back. This is the Woman's Legal Clinic. We're talking about the subject of abortion with attorneys Betty Levinson and Rhonda Copeland, and we're ready to take listener phone calls. And WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm very impressed with the program and horrified. I'm wondering if Rhonda or Betty want to make any mention of the two-day conference going on right today and tomorrow in Albany to prevent any erosion of New York State's humane policies on reproductive freedom.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, and I think it's very important, and I think it's part of an effort that is being carried on by all of the pro-choice groups in New York State to build support against, you know, the effort to cut off Medicaid funding.
Understand, you know about it, and I know about it. The audience, I'm wondering if you want to let the audience know.
Well, what do you have more facts on it? I know it's in Albany. It's organized by the family.
Going on. I'm not a one-issue person. But right. I do happen to know it's the Family Planning Advocates of New York State.
Right.
It's going on today and tomorrow. It's meeting with the legislators, Warren Anderson, Majority Leader of the Senate, Stanley Fink, the Speaker of the Assembly. Right now at 8:15, there's a party, and there are going to be an award to Carol Bellamy and Karen Burstein, who is a former senator of New York State. Tomorrow there's going to be a mock hearing on parental consent notice, which you discussed in some good detail. And there will be various people whom you know of course, like Bill Baird and others. And, of course, Tom Wicker, there is, of course, the head of the Family Planning, who, of course, is leading, Mary Lindsay. And in the afternoon, tomorrow, there'll be a discussion of the politics of the whole situation and by a number of people. So the aim is, of course, to pressure the state legislature.
Thank you for all of that. The other thing I would suggest about that is I suppose that if people who have missed the first day want to go up for tomorrow and are moved by the terrible situation we're in to do that, that you probably could find out about transportation by calling Planned Parenthood of New York City, since I think that they've been organizing a lot of buses and that you might not get a bus up, but I think you probably might be able to get on a bus back.
Okay.
Very possibly, yes.
There's another day that's similar to that, which is on Wednesday, I think 40 or more national organizations have sponsored a women's lobbying day in Washington. And the effort there, and I know their bus is going from New York City, and you could find out about that by calling the National Organization for Women here or Women USA. And that is an effort to really make a women's presence around basic women's issues in Washington. It's very important, I think, to greet the Reagan administration not with a sense of despair that it's hopeless and we can't do anything, but with a sense that we're going to be there and we're building and we're just not going to go back in.
Well, right, they're really the minority.
Right.
Incidentally, that's S-158, the Helms bill in the federal Senate.
Yes.
Okay, thanks very much.
And there's an equivalent bill also in the House. I don't know the number, but it's been introduced by Hyde.
Okay, I'd like to remind our listeners that you are listening to the Women's Legal Clinic. We are talking about the issue of abortion, its health, political, and historical ramifications. We're also talking about the Helms bill and the possibility of a human life amendment, as well as the possibility of a Family Protection Act, which was introduced last year, may be introduced in bits and pieces this year. If you'd like to talk with Rhonda Copeland or Betty Levinson, the number to call is area code 212-279-3400. That's area code 212-279-3400. Rhonda, why don't you just review just for a minute the Helms bill and also talk a little bit about the real meaning of a human life amendment to the Constitution. You've alluded to it, and certainly we know that it was part of the Republican platform, and we mm-hmm. heard something, although not that much about it this summer, but it certainly is a topic that is very important to the right-wing groups that have been mobilizing so successfully recently.
Well, the Helms bill is an attempt to try to create, by cutting out Roe v. Wade and the power of the federal courts to enforce it, a human life amendment, without having to gain 2/3 and 3/4 of the nation to do it. Basically, the essence of a human life amendment is to declare from the moment of fertilization that the fetus is a person under the Constitution, entitled to the right to life and presumably equal protection of the laws and all the rights that a born person is entitled to. This is something which is totally unprecedented in American law. The old anti-abortion statutes were not premised on the notion of a fetus as a person, but more on the dangers of abortion to women. And the difference between the old and the new means that, well, first of all, simply put, if you make the fetus a person, you make abortion illegal, because you can't take the life of a person, right? And that in and of itself is a terrible, terrible consequence. I think that a human life amendment would have consequences that would be even more terrible than what occurred prior to Roe v. Wade under the system of state criminal abortion laws. Because when you declare the fetus a person, you're doing a number of things. You're saying that the fetus has to be treated, and abortion, therefore, has to be treated as taking the life of a person. Now, that means that abortion would be potentially, and certainly most proponents of the amendment would like to see it prosecuted as murder or manslaughter. And that means heavy penalties. It means zealous enforcement. It means, in addition, ferreting out abortions rather than waiting until they come to public attention because of complications, which is how most prior prosecutions of abortion doctors arose. It also means prosecuting women who have abortions. Most women were exempt from the criminal statutes if they self-aborted or had illegal abortions. It also means prosecuting people who help women get abortions, because they are, what, accessories to murder or manslaughter or some very serious form of homicide. It also means that the state acquires power to try to stop abortions. Because, I mean, one of the things we know about criminalizing abortions is it doesn't stop them, it just increases the death rate for women. And so they will then, you know, use the idea that they are not simply stopping abortion, they are stopping murder, I think, to start to really invade people's lives in very total kinds of ways. And you know, although, and one can project, subjecting women's existence while pregnant or while potentially pregnant or suspect of being pregnant to a range of state regulation, whether it be drinking and smoking or where they can work or, you know, what risks of miscarriage they can permissibly take, it could, in fact, go to that extreme. Because if you say that the fetus is a whole person, you know, regardless of the fact that it is completely dependent on a woman for its survival, then you really turn the woman into kind of the carrier of this other entity, rather than allowing her, you know, the right of personhood in herself. And so I think that it is an unprecedented concept under our law, and it would really make the rights of the fetus supreme, ultimately, over the rights of the woman.
Rhonda, I just wanted to say that although some of the examples you raise sound, you know, horrific, there are others that even perhaps are less extreme and totally conceivable from my point of view as somebody who does a lot of work with custody.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it is not too amazing to imagine that a woman who has a number of children, who is a good mother, who seeks an abortion and cannot obtain an abortion, but her reasons for seeking it are perfectly valid, and that is to enhance and contribute to the quality of life of her already born children, that if she is now seen as a criminal, mm-hmm. and a murderer, then this opens up questions about her criminal record, her fitness as a mother, and has all kinds of implications regarding her ability to continue to be mm-hmm. a good mother, which is all that she wanted to be in the first place, to her already born children. And one can take that in any number of steps, considering the divorce rate, that then becomes an issue in custody fights. You know, a husband can come in and say, well, you know, I know, and it's been secret up until this date, but I know that she had an abortion, you know, she's a murderer, and how does this reflect on her morality and her ability to continue to mother? So that there are all kinds of horrible mm-hmm. but foreseeable mm-hmm. effects of such a law.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the Woman's Legal Clinic. We are taking listener phone calls. The number is area code 212-279-3400, and WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello, this is George Burns. I'd like to talk about abortion.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi. Sorry, let me just turn down the radio.
Please.
I was going to ask Ms. Copeland, given the political mood of the country, whether or not she thought that it might be a better political philosophy to defend the abortion issue on a sort of libertarian philosophy.
Well, I have to confess that the libertarian philosophy taken to its, you know, it what it reflects does not reflect a lot of what I believe, you know,
right.
I
can see how it would cause a lot of problems,
but,
especially in the public funding area.
But yeah, I mean, it doesn't help public funding at all, because it's like McRae. It's like, you know, you can do what you want to so long as you're rich enough to do it. And I don't think that that's really what we're fighting for, ultimately. On the other hand, I think that there is no question but that the Roe v. Wade decision leaves a decision of great moment to individual conscience, that is correct. It is correct from a feminist perspective. It is correct from a libertarian perspective. It is correct
from a human perspective.
A human perspective, right? That's right. And so, in that sense, it is true that we come together on the question of bodily integrity and the right to control your own life and the right to control, you know, basic private moral decisions.
Well, okay, but isn't the problem then that people who also have, and I think you tip your hat to people with moral standing who morally oppose an abortion, that they wind up having to fund something that's morally objectionable to them?
No, because you see, the thing is, in this society, I mean, everybody funds things that that they don't like and
well, but does that make it right? And is
well,
that something that we want
but,
to continue to have happen?
Yeah, because I think you have to. I think that if there are basic constitutional rights, you know, that sure, you know, maybe even a majority or somewhere near a majority of the people are not going to like those rights. But they don't have a right to impose that moral abhorrence or whatever it is on what another person does, which is the exercise of their basic rights. That is simply, that is the use of one's personal moral beliefs to impose it on another. The notion of, you know, of that being preserved as a right of privacy or a right of conscience or a basic liberty, is something which says it is despite the feelings of others. If they were really serious, if the Hyde Amendment people were really serious about just protecting the consciousnesses of
them, I don't believe they are. I
well,
think
no,
they
they're
have
not.
The same problem
but
at most.
Let me just finish.
You know,
if they were
tyrants have, and that is that they want to force their own.
They want to force it on someone
people.
Else. If they wanted to say, okay, you pass a law which gives us who are against abortion an exemption from some portion of our taxes so we don't have to have our taxes go to this purpose, okay, I wouldn't particularly fight about that. I think people shouldn't have to pay for the military budget either. But to let them impose their morality on poor women is what is offensive. And I think that's offensive to a libertarian as well as to a feminist and as well as to a constitutionalist.
Well, our only problem becomes that while we grant, you know, and grant, my God, you know, granted, it's there. I mean, a woman as well as anybody else has a right to their own body and fruits thereof. And it would seem that if someone, you know, decides to, you know, has a sovereignty over that, whether it be the biological processes or what you would call, I guess, profit-making or resource-creating processes, and that it's not the not within the realm of public power to dictate how those should be used.
I'm afraid we're going to have to...
No problem. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Take it easy. I'll keep listening.
Okay. We're running out of time here. We do have a lot of more listener phone calls, but I'm sorry to say that we'll be unable to take them at this time. We will be certainly doing more programs on this very important topic in the near future, and I hope you consult your program listings to hear about them. You have been listening to Every Woman's Space. This edition of Every Woman's Space has been the Woman's Legal Clinic with attorneys Betty Levinson and Rhonda Copeland discussing the issue of abortion. The next edition of Every Woman's Space will be 2 weeks from tonight. The next edition of the Woman's Legal Clinic will be the first Monday in April at 7:30 p.m. Thank you for listening.